Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Part of why we mainly do these acting studies is mainly just to see how they evolve over time, for lack of a better word.
Well, Kevin Spacey, I mean, for years was one of my favorite actors. That's why I was wondering, are we recording now? You haven't started yet.
Yeah, I started now. It's all good.
Wasn't sure if you wanted to touch on his personal issues or not.
I don't
really know anything about them. I wasn't really following
that. So long story short, you know, I had heard he had been an asshole on sets. Like, I knew some people who were extras on a set that he was on in Louisiana, and he kind of belittled them. But I know he and Bryan Singer, another infamous guy, you know, another case of like the talent hate the person. Surprisingly did not get along on Usual Suspects. I was blown away when I heard that story. But so it was mainly just that he randomly admitted to just having a statutory rape relationship, and then to hide it, then he admitted that he was gay, which was a lot of suspicion. So it was just one of those one and done. And the people who accused him actually committed suicide.
Oh boy. Now I'm just depressed.
Okay, well, ironically, even though he could technically still work, since that scandal was just almost as bad as Weinstein, no one wants to work with him again. But I got on an amusing note, I want to know where he got that awesome lawyer, because that awesome lawyer basically made it to where he can never be prosecuted for that same offense ever again.
Wow, you're a pretty good deal.
That's a damn good lawyer. Oh, and Spacey has played many a lawyer, so
that's true.
On an amusing note, I'm going to mention his guest appearance earlier in his career. He'd done some shows like Wise Guy, but one guest spot on a TV show that stuck out to me really good was, I think it's around season 6 or 7 of LA Law. He plays this just unusual guy who's just like visiting the firm and just like basically has a addiction to just running around barely wearing any pants and just bursting into song. He's basically a shy just guy trying to break the normal atmosphere. It's just an outrageous appearance for, and I was impressed by this role because this was very early in his career when he was still just a Broadway guy. So pretty cool to have a guest spot on a popular NBC show. I'll hand it over now to David. What's role number two that you'd like to mention?
Well, the first role that I... Hold on, let me... notes here. The first role that I really remember him in... Again, like we talked about Samuel L. last night, you know, it's the first role that I remember noticing him in. Then when you go back and watch older stuff, you're like, okay, that was him, but I just didn't... You know, he didn't stand out to me then. But I think it was probably Glengarry Glen Ross was the first role that he really stood out to me. And that's such a fantastic movie.
Absolutely.
You can't say enough good things about that movie. Every performance, and all the great actors in it, you know, Alan Arkin
fun story. Alec Baldwin was recently on Rob Lowe's podcast, and he told some funny stories about how basically everybody was just so in character that at times there was just the feeling of being humiliated by one another, even though they knew it was all play and pretend.
Yeah, well, the stuff that comes out of Alec Baldwin's mouth in his scene, he has one, you know, 10-minute dialogue, and the stuff that comes out of his mouth is just so funny.
It is so funny, and yet it's one of those, he's the boss from hell, and to see Spacey for once not even be just kind of a jerk ass and just be kind of just like,
he's kind of a schlub.
He's not very good at his job, and he can't admit that he's not good at it. Yeah, there he is. And when he was on Inside the Actor's Studio, he just talked about how he was such good friends with Jack Lemmon, and they could do perfect impersonations of one another.
But that's the first role that I think that I remember. And then I noticed some other things before.
All right. Let's see if John's third role might pick our brains.
Yeah.
Well, the first movie I was introduced to him, and this is actually kind of interesting to find out it was him, was his voice role in A Bug's Life. That's how.
I saw that. It's interesting you said it, because my daughter was just at the right age when Bug's Life came out, and that was one of my favorite movies to watch with her. I wanted to watch it more than she did. The animation was so great.
What's funny is I didn't even realize that it was kind of a Seven Samurai kind of tribute. A guy takes over a village of ants. And Spacey was definitely the only thing I remembered about it, really. It's just because his villain was just so funny. He's supposed to be scary, and here he is, you know, his name is like Crawler or Creepy or something.
Hopper,
yeah. Yeah, there you go. and he's just... He literally is. He's not even hopping around. He's just basically just taking over the whole village. And I remember them doing some kind of featurette, I think, on Disney Channel back in the day. You know, any upcoming movie, they would show the actors in the voice booth. And I think I do recall that is like around that time, Spacey is just, you know, 98, 99, this surprise actor who came out of nowhere, you know, winning all the awards. Mm-hmm. And here he is in this movie made for everybody. And again, you're just some kind of, I don't want to sugarcoat the villain, but it is kind of a fun, just kind of Jeremy Irons kind of role for him, for lack of a better comparison.
Yep.
That kind of is like, yeah, I'm going to, I, you know, this is my village now, and you're going to enjoy it here.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. So, I'll mention another quick role that is a perfect counterpart to Glengarry Glen Ross, and that is Big Kahuna.
Seen that.
It's all good. It was an indie comedy that kind of flew under the radar. Spacey plays perfectly off of Danny DeVito, just playing these businessmen who have an amusing take on life. And much like Ross, it might not be based on a play, though, but it has that kind of feel, just this quirky, you know, just back and forth dialogue without having to rip off Tarantino or anything. And it's just a very enjoyable, laid-back dramedy. And it kind of also reminds me of other movies from around that same time, like Boiler Room. And Wall Street. Yeah. But yeah, like Ross, it's just so rare that you get that kind of legit gambling movie.
Yeah.
So rule number four, whoever wants it.
Who's up?
I'll let you fire away, German.
I hate to take the best of the bunch, but I got to go with him as John Doe in Seven.
There we go.
Yes.
I mean, it's an obvious choice, but that movie... And David Fincher is one of my favorite directors of all time.
I think he's everyone's favorite filmmaker. Just, even though he doesn't always engage you emotionally as a person, you can just tell that, you know, years later when you heard the stories of, you know, just 70 takes of different scenes, he is a perfectionist. Yeah. And so if you don't like it, you can leave. But
when you say, oh, people say, what's your favorite director? You say, well, David Fincher's one. Oh, like everybody else. Well, yeah, there's a reason he's everybody's favorite. You know, he's on everybody's list of favorite directors.
Right. He really can't do any wrong. Even if you see a movie that you don't care for, he's hardly one where you're like, oh.
Well, Alien Resurrection is a good example of that. We talked about that.
Yeah.
I like that movie. That movie's very divisive. I like that movie.
I never had a problem with it, but it is, like John said before, it's one of those...
In different hands, it might not have been as good.
Well, and the producer's cut is definitely one to check out. But it's also kind of a perfect example of, like, Michael Mann with The Keep, where you're never going to be able to get a
viewer. That's a strange, movie.
Yeah. Right. But it's definitely a perfect example of, it's like, okay, well, you know, the artist is close to it, so of course they're not going to like it as much as we do. They're just hoping, you know, it gives them their next gig and that they get to creatively show some of their license, you know, license to frill.
And the thing, Seven is so there's that scene when he's in the back of the squad car, you know, the beginning of the big finale. He goes through so many emotions. He's, you know, he's at one point. Really sure of himself and like pompous, maybe not. I don't know.
He's very narcissistic and joking around.
And then he becomes enraged when Brad Pitt's character says that the people were innocent. And then he becomes sort of euphorically, you know, calm when he says, you know, you're all going to be puzzling. He does this range of emotion in a 7-minute scene that I find fascinating. You know, those are some acting chops right there.
Right, because previously we only got, you know, the cat and mouse over the phone time.
Yeah, you didn't really get into his character at all, except just a little tiny bit. But yeah, that's great.
It was one of those they didn't even have any problem, like, saying his name on the poster or, you know, TV ads, and yet everyone still just kind of, because it was so long, they just forgot.
Wasn't he not even credited in the credits in that, because they wanted to keep it a secret?
I think that was the case.
Maybe in some occasion or some TV prints, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Rob's now we know. But I think initially he wasn't even in the original credits because
he still gets residuals definitely for that one.
I love that movie beyond measure anyway.
And it's one of those it's also just a good just kind of psychological thing for everyone to have on their reel, you know, just where
it's bloody terrifying.
And to have a rookie cop who's just losing it, and the other detectives just calm as all get out, trying to figure out, and because he's so confused, he's not even losing his temper tantrum on the guy or letting his anger feed him, you know? So it is interesting from, you know, and unfortunately, most of Hollywood, just like with Scream, just would remember the shocking moments and forget what made it awesome in the first place, you know?
That's true.
I love Brad Pitt's line. Just because the fucker has a library card doesn't make him Yoda. Which is a funny line in a couple of ways, because it shows that Brad Pitt's character is a little bit of a child, because he's the new cop, because he quotes Yoda. You know, he's using Yoda as an example.
Right.
Yeah. They're showing he's a little bit childish. Not that, you know.
Freeman's, you know, like quoting like Socrates. And
right. Stuff. And he's quoting Yoda, you know. Or
fucking Yoda. Yeah.
That's a little bit of a character insight, a little bit of
I think that you can definitely tell that the marketing team behind the movie knew that they were going to have just as many hipsters as they were old school kind of noir cinema lovers. So, yeah, they wanted to have that perfect diverse crowd going to see it opening night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I looked into the list of his works, I was highlighting the ones I wanted to. And that was definitely, love it.
Yeah, I'm sure we would have had chairs and shoes thrown if we didn't mention it. I mean, it is one of those. How can we not?
Yeah.
I'm going to give John number 6.
Ooh. Wow.
From the movie from that same year.
Right.
I could do that one, but I could also mention his role in LA Confidential.
Oh, okay, perfect. Fire away, because for such a once again, another narcissistic kind of role, and then realizing he's not the top shot that he claims to be in the papers.
That's what makes his character so interesting in that movie.
Absolutely.
He learns about himself there, and then we get to what happens. I won't say what, if anybody has seen it. I'm sure most people have, but
I think the statute of limitations is probably passed by now.
Right. Sure this going one, to movie, John, but... you have not seen this movie, listeners.
Yeah. But,
I love how we made a joke on a cop movie.
That was actually one part that did surprise me, because I didn't read anything about this movie beforehand, and when that happened to him, that actually kind of surprised me.
And you always kind of thought he was kind of like the lead star, because he's first on the cover, and Russell Crowe's always in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And Bud White's, you know, Crowe's character, is technically a secondary character.
Mm-hmm. Now, was Russell Crowe relatively unknown at the time?
He had done a few other movies like that. This was after he had done Virtuosity, and he was kind of becoming...
That movie hurts.
It was more Guy Pearce, though, was unknown, I would say.
Yeah, that and Memento back-to-back definitely helped him out. And what's just funny about Spacey is he's basically the poster boy of the police precinct.
Mm-hmm.
And like Seven, the movie does a good job of throwing back to noir type stuff. And I love how, you know, Crow's basically the bad cop who tries to redeem himself.
Yeah.
And what he does is basically just, he starts a fight in the prison riot on Christmas night, and he's basically like taking an interview, and he just joins right in with all the SWAT. And then takes credit for the takedown. That's just right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey's character, he's the star, he's on the TV show, but he's lost what made him a cop in the first place. He even says, I can't think of the
cop. That's right. He's basically,
he says to him, "Why did you become a cop?" And he says, "I don't remember."
Yeah. He's,
and then he went,
so
and he,
lost in the ego.
And then he gets it. He finally gets it back, but it costs him his life.
Right. And then when he starts to care, it's damn too late. And you're kind of glad, kind of secretly, because you're not, even though he kind of seemed like he was going to, you know, he's not necessarily a bad person. He's in the gray zone. It is one of those. He could have worked with, you know, Pierce's brilliant guy or Bud White, and he would have still just done barely anything. It's like a group assignment in high school. The fourth person never does anything, but takes a credit.
You see that kind of character in a lot of dramas, a character who has lost his way.
Yeah, they're not bad.
And decides to get it back. Right, not really bad, but maybe narcissistic like he was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then gets back what made him, you know, happy in the first place, but it winds up costing him, you know.
Right, and it's just kind of wild how he's basically on the equivalent of, like, a 50s version of Cops. You know, he's going around saying, here's how the police are, and we're the good old boys.
Yeah, and he's kind of a douche at the beginning, too. He sets up that young actor and actress in the hotel and smoking marijuana. He basically sets them up so that Danny DeVito's character can be there to... take pictures of them. He really ruins the kids. And then he pimps the kid out to sleep with the I forgot the title that man had that he talks the kid into sleeping with. It was a county commissioner or whatever he was.
Oh yeah, are you talking about David Strathairn's character? I think he's like a pimp later in the movie.
I get it, but not that guy. The guy that Russell Crowe dangles out the window towards the end. That character.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what he was. Crazy. Was he the police commissioner or something?
Yeah. Ron Rifkin, I think, is who.
Right. He basically pimps that kid out to him.
Totally.
And then he feels bad. Anyway, that's an excellent choice. I love that. That's one of those movies that if you stumble across it on TV or whatever, you just can't stop watching it.
Absolutely. And it's heavily featured in the excellent 2003 documentary, which if you can shell out money for, it's so worth it. But God, the costs I'm seeing on Amazon are just... should totally be illegal.
There's a documentary about LA Confidential?
It's one of many movies that's featured in it. The theme is called LA Plays Itself. And they heavily feature like five different scenes from LA Confidential, and it's like, it's so true. The city is rightfully depicted, and it's shady and it's colorful and it's daring and beautiful moments, and it's as much a character as the actual living and breathing characters. And it's a good documentary just showing you how LA was actually corresponding to the actual screenplay of various blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great choice. That movie is, that's a good choice.
Absolutely. And I mean, the scenes they take are like the most subtle ones, but such well photographed, much like Heat. And
yep.
Like you say, I have been, it is one of those, I always like to see parts of it on TV when it's on, but I just need to just shell out and get the new Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's worth it.
It's definitely worth it.
That's good. I think, yeah, John, you did say you snatched it up off of Amazon discounted.
Yep, I did.
In fact, don't they even have that LA Plays Itself documentary on there?
I believe they do.
Okay, so perfect. I don't even have to buy two separate titles. Two for the price of one.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's a great number six. So I'm going to go with rule number seven, which is Shrink. Now, neither of you are familiar with this one, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
It's all good. It's all good. It's, once again, like Big Kahuna. It was just one of those, had a limited release, but pretty solid reviews, where he plays this man who's having kind of a midlife crisis. But before you can say American Beauty, what he really gets really well in this, it just shows how he just has to basically subtract the negative and realize that it's never going to get better, so he should just be thankful for what he does have while he's going through a bunch of family tragedies. Yeah, Shrink. It was just one of those, I was just like, man, Kevin, you're still the man. The badass.
I'll have to seek it out.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on Prime or one of those streaming platforms. So I'll let you handle role number eight.
No, me? Okay. I'm gonna go with K-Pac. 2001, yes. K-Pac. Not so much for me. That was one of my father's favorite movies. He loved that movie so much.
So same here. My folks would just be like, yeah, it's like Starman. It's a ripping psychological movie.
And that's which was strange for my father, because he would never. I don't know. You can't really classify that movie as science fiction. It's more of a psychological drama, I guess. Yeah. But he actually adored that movie, and Kevin Spacey's performance is whimsical and fantastic. Yeah, it's funny. He's got some really funny scenes in that, you know, sort of the fish out of water, you know, like Starman, especially towards the beginning when Jeff Bridges first becomes human. It's some of the comic effect of, you know, like him trying to figure out how to be human.
Absolutely. And
tell me at the ending, what do you guys think? Was he an alien or not?
He wasn't an alien, but... That was one of the first few movies where I kind of, I wouldn't say I made my own ending, but I looked at the greater symbolism, because, you know, it's a visually striking movie. It's like, he might not be an alien, but he might as well be an alien, because he's so alien, so to speak, to, you know, the social norms, which is why he's in this crazy nut house. And
that ending always made me think of, remember Peter Sellers at the end of Being There?
Yes.
When he walks on the lake, because it's not. Is he actually like? What does that mean? Is he superhuman? Is he the reincarnation of Christ, or is he just so dim that he doesn't know any better? You know what I mean?
Right. Is he God's perfect creatures? Is he a holy son? What is it that?
Yeah. Or is it just he's just blissfully unaware that he can't do it?
Right.
Yeah.
He's just so sincere, and yet, like you say, he might as well be a supernatural being, because he's such a rare kind of human. Jeff Bridges plays off him really good, and this is one of those movies, because it's not a psycho thriller or anything, they don't have to try and one-up each other. I'll give a good parallel, I guess. Kind of like with Arlington Road. He's trying to understand his own beliefs. I know, not John's favorite, but I mean,
no.
Just in terms of him trying, he kind of doubts himself, because he's never had a case like this before, while also trying to figure out, for lack of a better comparison, just, you know, what he believes versus what his subject believes. And it changes him as a human. So that's where you actually felt like, while the movie, most movies like this would often go for a shocking plot twist, it just took it a step further and just said, hey, everybody's been changed by this, whether they know it or not. Whole encounter. Yeah, very good find there, sir.
Well, there you go.
And good comparison to being there. I never thought of that, but that's a perfect. Peter Sellers basically would be a perfect comparison for Spacey in his prime.
Yeah, his performance in Being There is just, has always stuck in my mind ever since the first time I saw it.
I mean, he just had to.
He was one of the greats.
For sure. So I will let John talk about role number 9, and I take it it's going to be either Usual Suspects or Negotiator.
Well, it's going to be Negotiator, of course.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah. This is actually the one that introduced me to him live action, actually.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So, I'm trying to have a man not get shot.
Well, I mean, got,
I need you to stop shooting at him.
Well, there's just so many scenes. In particular, the first scene he meets Sam Jackson is, to me, one of the best scenes in any thriller in the 90s. And...
Right?
I like how, well, you could say they're trying to, you know, basically up each other and performance-wise, they still managed to match evenly, him and Jackson. And...
Right. It's a fugitive kind of dilemma. He's Tommy Lee Jones and Jackson is Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
But it goes a step further in that, aside from the I'm a minority and behind hiding behind the blue shield, now it's even, you know, a bit of addiction really does stir up Spacey, where he's like, was this guy set up? Should I doubt my superiors for once in my career? I'm a negotiator after all. So,
Yeah, he's supposed to have great insight into the human, you know, mind for his job, and right, he has to use that against his, figure out if he's being played.
Right, and I mean, and he has, you know, after a few scuffles, he briefly does say, okay, well, you know, aside from the fact that the guy did not kill me, you know, there's just something to him, that aura I'm getting, you know, and why would he lie? He's never had any psychological breakdown or, you know, lost his rocker or cool any day on the set. He's a negotiator like me. So it is kind of cool how, like Apex, they leave clues for each other to figure out, and it takes the audience on a whole journey of discovery.
And that's what makes it so compelling to watch.
Right. And do not, you know, the trailers are going to just show just the SWAT teams bursting down, but that's just there when it needs to be there, you know?
Yeah, it's not, this is not like a full-on action movie like some people might think.
Right.
It's more of a traditional thriller than your typical action movie.
Mm-hmm. Action mystery. And this is where the 90s were just so great, because then you would just get movies that basically you had to put them in like three different categories or areas instead of, well, it's just this or it's just that, you know.
I remember the trailer for that. That seemed like every action movie that came out during that period had the trailer had the scene with like a bunch of lasers going through a window, or
in the
Professional, they did it in the Peacemaker, where it was all these lasers going through a window or through a door.
Fun fact, at least one to two different movies a few years after ended up using stock footage of the SWAT team scenes.
Oh, really? Those, yeah. Those, I remember, I think the Professional was the first movie that I noticed doing it.
The Professional was definitely a main... I mean, there was plenty of other... Like you say, there was other Hong Kong and American movies, but yeah, The Professional was definitely the one that just got the ball rolling.
That always struck me. That's why every movie's got this laser beam scene now.
Right. And then the writer of this ended up working on other stuff like The Kill Point, which was an awesome hostage drama for Spike TV. Then he did the Assault on Precinct 13 rehash and then the Purge movies. And so it's like he has a thing for just showing just hostage scenarios and former cops against other cops.
Now I should point out, but negotiate. Well, there's two things I should point out real quick.
Yeah.
That the original ending was them ending like in a Mexican standoff.
Oh,
and,
really?
And Spacey objected to that because he said it's been done so many times and they rewrote it because of what he said. And the second thing is that this was supposed to be Stallone and Spacey. Spacey was going to be the Samuel L. Jackson character.
Stallone
was going to be. Stallone was going to be a negotiator.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. That would have been a different movie.
Exactly.
Imagine if Arnold Schwarzenegger had been the frame cop.
Yeah.
He tries to kill me.
So I find that kind of fascinating.
Oh, yeah. I so wanted to see their version of Face Off. Still to this day.
Especially with John Woo directing, that would be amazing.
Oh, man.
Seriously.
Something, man. He wouldn't have regretted it. He would have been like, his Thanos is a very, very strong and very popular man.
So yep. Open,
his Rampo movies inspired my impressions. So I'll end roll number 10 with Usual Suspects, and then we'll do some honorable mentions.
Okay.
So how many of you had this movie kind of spoiled for you, but it didn't really faze you at all?
I did not, actually.
Yeah, me neither. I did not have it spoiled for me. I think specifically I made it a point to not let it be spoiled for me because I'd heard
about the big twist. I was always watching reviews, but, you know, during high school, it came on AMC quite a lot, and it did blow me the hell away. And it was definitely one of the first movies where I watched it and I said, there's not a negative thing about this.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just talk about the opening scene, which had some improvised dialogue.
Improvised.
Yeah, the Benicio del Toro stuff. They ended up keeping it some because everyone is just complying.
One thing I've always wondered about Usual Suspects is how is it that Stephen Baldwin is so good in this and he's so bad in absolutely everything else?
I mean, it's definitely, it is one of those where it's like Daniel, you know, Billy Baldwin is in all these outrageously bad movies, but not a bad actor. Daniel was really good on Homicide, Life on the Street. And then, like you say, goes into bad movie film. And yeah, Steven, you know, he's already off to a bad start and appears in this, then disappears again. And it's just like.
Yeah, I know. But he's so good. He's so good in this.
I think he just felt like his ego was at the right kind where he just wanted to actually. I call it the Law and Order effect. Because there's been plenty of bad actors who have been really good on their episodes, you know? And so it's just one of those where basically, because you get only two takes, something sinks in that, hey, this is your brand. You can't fuck this up. You will never, you know, be invited. You'll be... So I don't know if he was the kind that misbehaved or just didn't take direction all that well and everyone just suffered, but... I think definitely after seeing that he was alongside the likes of Gabriel Byrne, Spacey, and even comedian Kevin Pollak, he just knew that he couldn't phase out of the background, especially when he has all the outrageous gunplay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And it's one of those movies with the big twist, kind of like Fight Club, that once you see it... when you start watching it the second time, it's almost a totally different movie because you know what the big twist is, so you see little details you didn't see the first time.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to peel it away. It is like an onion. There's multiple layers, and then the layers that you do peel away do strike you, and what an all-star cast. I mean, Chaz Palminteri had played coppers, but never as the main guy who the audience roots for, trying to figure out if this guy is full of shit or not. And Giancarlo Esposito as the injured witness. And there's a few other just minor.
Yeah, that's right.
And have you ever seen the internet forum joke that was Saul's backstory? He got injured.
Oh, really?
So I think I saw something like that. That would have been funny.
That would have been.
I think somewhere I do vaguely recall Vince Gilligan had seen him in that movie, and that's why he cast him. But that's a different story for when we actually cover him.
Okay.
So I'm just going to give a few honorable mentions. David, did you ever see the Life of David Gale?
No, I haven't yet. And interestingly enough, that's another movie that my father loved. I never really watched. Yeah, Kevin Spacey was one of my father's favorite actors. He used to tell me all the time, "Oh, you need to watch this movie. You need to watch it." And I never did watch it.
Yeah, it was another one. I was telling John before we recorded last week that it flat out just got. It made no money. It ended, you know, respected filmmaker Alan Rudolph's career. He just passed away with recently, but. I remember it being featured on many audience and users lists as, you know, movies critics hated that actually aren't bad. Because, mm-hmm. You go to Rotten Tomatoes, all those other sites, they got like a 12% rating. When I saw it, I gave it at least a decent, you know, 70% score. That'd be fine.
No, but no, I have not seen. I liked, as an honorable mention, and I know this is probably controversial in some circles, or a lot of circles, is his performance as Lex Luthor in Superman Returns. I thought he was fine. I know it's a hard time from a lot of people.
Yeah, and it was just one of those people were so distracted by not liking the movie. It's like, okay, it's not your typical Superman. It kind of plays it safe, but he was a great Lex Luthor.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job as Lex Luthor. I don't know.
Wrong!
He was the best part of the movie.
Yeah, he was. He really was. Which it's not a great movie, but
no, it's not. But I mean,
yeah, he is the best. He is the best part in it.
Yeah,
I could probably throw in. I know this one's kind of controversial too now, because of what happened. But I could probably say American Beauty.
Yeah, I mean,
that really is a fantastic film.
It is, yeah.
And what all these roles have in common is just showing him just kind of taking a chance with each of these roles and just kind of making sure that by the end of the movie, you understand his villain a little more.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is where I just say I wasn't surprised that he wasn't the best person because he related to it. So I guess that's why he brought out the humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Channeled his acting side. Swimming with Sharks is definitely another must see.
Yeah, no, I've not seen it.
So when I saw him in Horrible Bosses, I was like, oh, I know why he's here.
I bet you could mention that one too.
Also. Yeah.
That's actually a pretty funny movie.
They both had their pretty funny moments, and they definitely just do a perfect, just every person's secret fantasy of just saying, you know what, I'm gonna kick my boss's ass. he just knows how to play to the camera and really just root for you for the audience to just want his ass just thrown. And just I just guffawed when, you know, Swimming with Sharks has a fantasy sequence where he's pleading for his life, saying no, I'll give you a raise, you know, at gunpoint. And Horrible Boss is same thing. He gets tossed out onto his own car, out the building, saying, "You're going to get fired for this." Oh, God. So then I'll end this with two other legal roles. His role in the PBS movie Darrow, where he played a real-life libertarian lawyer.
Which I did watch.
What did you think?
I thought it was an interesting take on that
He really did play to the screen in that one. It's not must-see, but it is just a stage production. And then...
Oh, yeah.
Definitely let's mention It's Time to Kill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good one.
You just root for him. It's like, man, he not only hates black people, but he just sees no wrong doing to defending this rapist. And prosecuting this man who just took the law into his own hands. And it's kind of interesting because, kind of like LA Confidential, he sees no harm in what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But I think they do establish that he's on some of the bad guys' payroll.
Oh, yeah, they do establish
it. Yeah, and so it is interesting. He sees no harm in it. To him, it's just a typical client. He's like, no, dude, you're being funded by the KKK. Mm-hmm. Not cool. So, more or less, good picks, guys. Very kind of an emotional tour de force. Describing these villainous roles and anti-heroes and supernatural beings that he got to play.
Yeah, he's always been reliable. Sort of an everyman actor, I guess. I guess he's had a couple of larger than life roles, but I remember American Beauty, sort of just your average, you know, suburban husband. That's always how I pictured him.
Yeah, and I apologize for not listing Baby Driver. I'm in the minority and didn't.
Oh yeah, I had that on my list, but we didn't bring it up. I that movie took me 2 or 3 viewings to come around to. I think it actually is a very good movie. I don't think I liked it as much as I thought I would the first time I saw it.
What's wild is you kind of forget that he's in the movie, even though he's like on the poster.
It reminded me a lot of Driver, or is it Drive with Ryan Gosling? It's just
Drive. Oh, Drive, right? Okay, so
yeah, it had a lot of parallels with that.
I
prefer that this over Drive, in my opinion.
You'd rather watch Baby Driver than Drive?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say that. They both have their points.
I'd rather watch The French Connection or The Driver by Walter Hill.
We just still got one right. By the way.
So. Yeah, James Caan, right?
Not James Caan. Similar, Ryan O'Neill. But
oh, okay. Yes, right. Okay. I think I was thinking of Crooker.
For once, playing. You're probably thinking of
James Caan. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, that's right.
Definitely. Oh, you're thinking of Thief.
That's Thief. No.
Thief. There's a winner. I'll watch that all day too. It's such a great Tangerine Dream soundtrack.
Yeah, remember when Tangerine Dream did the soundtrack to every single movie? It was like there was a
they
period.
Scored all of Babylon 5, for God's sakes.
Every movie was Tangerine Dream.
Yeah. I was listening to them last year while, you know, driving around at my job, and ironically, it was raining, and the music was almost kind of making me fall asleep. It literally is that dreamy, and it's like, whoa, I better listen to something else, like rap music.
didn't they do Heat?
Similar. That was The Edge, you know.
Oh, okay.
From U2. Okay. But no, and a very interesting parallel, because sometimes, you know, Michael Mann wouldn't even have a specific composer. He would just have like 6 different artists, you know, play 2 different songs throughout his movies. And so definitely a good example of how music can just make or break a movie.
Well, we could also mention quite real quick about the movie that Kevin Spacey directed a moment ago.
Yeah, were you able to re-see it?
Yeah. It was on Prime recently. And...
Okay, yeah. David, did you ever see Albino Alligator?
No, I have not.
So it's, it's a part whodunit, part just Dog Day Afternoon type hostage thriller.
Yeah.
It's got an all-star cast, and Spacey was the director behind it, but it features Psycho William Fichtner, an insider guy who's not who he claims to be, Viggo Mortensen, and Frankie Faison is one of the police lieutenants. I forget who played Joe Mantegna is the negotiator, who's very puzzled.
Gary Sinise as the injured hostage taker, and Matt Dillon as one of the brothers who's not sure what to do.
You got Faye Dunaway.
Yeah, she's in there too, and I wonder what she was like to work on set.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
I knew someone who once worked on a crap film with her. I don't know the name, but somewhere in Texas around 2000s. And long story short, it was a so low budget that the catering was limited. And the assistant walked out, and Faye just flat out froze the food tray right out of her trailer onto the grass.
Wow.
Yeah, someone's not eating today and probably going to get in trouble with the unions. I'm sure they had a legal backbone saying, hey, we did give her a food. It's not our fault. She's too fucking stupid and won't eat it. Perfectly made beans and salad. Actors, man. So I can see him give her giving Spacey lip and Spacey being like, I love to hate you. You're perfect.
Well, if I come across albino alligator, I will definitely give it a viewing.
Yeah, John Spencer from LA Law is also there as one of the hostages. Mm-hmm. So is Skeet Ulrich, the same year he was in Scream.
Green, so. Yep. And The Craft, three movies that year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so there you go. Self-made man. I've had to remind people who he is, because like Robin Tooney, he was kind of in everything, but everyone forgot.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yep. Acting, man. It's a marketing game. So, John, what are you reviewing next?
Well, hopefully my next review will come out soon.
Oh, wait, that's right. We didn't mention Edison Force. Do you want to put it on here?
We could put it on here.
You said you were distracted by Spacey's wig in that movie.
Yeah, there are times you can really tell it's a wig. Like, what the hell? Come on.
So, once again, it's not a must-see, but I did find him in Mort Freeman's police and news team roles pretty interesting.
I didn't even think Timberlake was that bad in it, surprisingly.
Yeah, it's another crooked cop movie, David, and it's all right. I didn't like it when I first saw it, but I can accept it now.
All right, noted.
Yeah, it's worth watching once, at least.
Just another Serpico, again, Street Kings type movie.
The almost one he does and didn't.
Right, and LL Cool J is clearly still in SWAT mode.
LL Cool J.
Yeah, LL Cool J, he's no iced tea.
Don't call it a comeback, I've been here for years. Plus he was in Deep Blue Sea, which we talked about last night a little bit.
There you go, yeah.
You ate my bird.
Mm-hmm. Mama said knock you out.
Mama said knock you out. I like that song.
Oh man!
Oh yeah,
German. What are you currently gaming?
I've been playing Red Dead Online still. I like the chill sort of, because the older I get, the less I'm able to compete at like, you know, Call of Duty or stuff. This is a nice chill experience where
my uncle gave
I can avoid other people.
But yeah, and my uncle gave up years ago. Where whenever he and my father and my brother were just all playing each other, but basically. My uncle would just let himself die because he had martyrdom on. So basically a grenade would go off and he'd wipe out everybody on the map.
I did pick up Hitman 3, but I have not played it yet. But
you did tell me that.
Yeah, it's sitting there. Online's been my go-to for a long time now.
Really, Agent 47.
Really since it came out.
Yeah.
So if anybody listening wants to play Xbox, Red Dead Online, I am Mr. Misty. On Xbox Live.
Mr. Misty, fight German. He'll take you down.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm a benevolent player in this. I play as a good guy.
He promises to not teabag your body.
I don't think you can teabag in Red Dead Online.
Oh well. You never know.
Could add that. No, I usually avoid other players, and if another player, an actual player starts coming up too close to me, I'll load my weapon with explosive ammo just in case. And if they and if they make a false move, they're dead.
They're fucking dead.
But I leave them alone. Otherwise, I leave people alone.
Oh boy. Yeah, online, I could definitely not do it nowadays, because even if I had a proper connection, it's just nobody wants to work as a team. They just want to troll and be stupid.
Yeah, what you read that online is great for that, because there's plenty to do. In fact, you can do 80% of the game by yourself. You don't really need other people to do this. There's a couple of missions you need other players. You can play the whole game by yourself.
Well, that's just the beauty of just, you know, it was Rockstar Games to just say, hey, you know, this is Grand Theft Auto, but in the Wild West and everything.
I tried Grand Theft Auto online, and it was like, respawn, get shot in the face. Respawn, get shot in the face. That just wasn't. It was, anyway. Yeah, that's what I'm playing. So, yes. Yeah.
Sure, for sure.
Okay.
Well, lovely having you on here, and this is the shortest episode we've done so far on the acting showcase. So.
Well, that's okay. I get up early. You know how early I have to get up in the mornings.
I know. You got to you're doing basically great for shit, kind of like me.
Yeah, I go in early. But no, it's great to be on. Appreciate it. I'd like, reviewing or revisiting these actors.
And filmmakers, how they evolve as artists.
Their portfolios. There's always something you forgot about or haven't seen, and it encourages me to go back and watch.
Because the actors can kind of hide a little bit because, you know, they don't know what's going to work, what's not. They just have to make sure that their acting brand is well showcased and they have somebody to put on the reel. Well, with the filmmakers, you know, they don't know half the time, you know, based on how involved they are, what they're doing to put, you know, pay their mortgage and eat versus, well, you know, I this is my heart and joy. You know, this is my pride.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight
as needed, and let the hosts Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag.
What does that mean?
Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. And then we just watch it, and we talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
Most of the time.
Ah.
Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We might talk about video games.
Mm-hmm. Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, we know what we like to do. We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller of the podcast realm. Undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you can think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, motherf***. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ.
Ah.
We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say
Ah.
All that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
don't run the listeners away, PJ.
Ah, I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
A As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at GOH Pod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history doll popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Bana, 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 bana,
everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes and gratuitous boobies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy
at EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She Podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Semenov, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Hi, everybody. It's Mac Jackson. I wanted to invite you to a new site called the Forever Adventure Network. This website has everything. Pictures, videos, blogs. There's original music by Harmony Constant. Two podcasts. One is the MacGyver Podcast, where we celebrate Richard Dean Anderson, his iconic roles, and how it's influenced our lives. There's episode discussions, interviews, and life conversations. The second podcast is the Never Gets Old Podcast, where we celebrate all the best things that we love in life, from TV, movies, music, and comics. The site is also the home for the MacGyver SG-1 audio series, an ongoing adventure series that continues the adventures of MacGyver and SG-1. There are also multiple stores to choose from for all of your pop culture and adventure needs. Come on by and check us out today. And thanks for joining the adventure.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod. Or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.